Hey guys, this is Jordan. Before we hop into our episode today, many of you have asked us whether or not we're doing a TGFB event in Las Vegas this year before the big Bitcoin conference there. The answer is yes and no. While we're not going to be doing a full two-day conference in Vegas, we did decide to put on a private event for the TGFB community where we could also invite our friends who work in the Bitcoin industry who will be in town for the Bitcoin Magazine conferences. So with that said, we are announcing the TGFB Las Vegas Friends and Family Barbecue, presented by Ridge Runner and the Highland Rim Sporting Club. You can join us on Tuesday, May 27th from noon to 4 p.m. for a private event featuring slow-cooked brisket, ribs, sides, cold drinks, and great company. Whether you're a longtime Bitcoiner or this is your first Bitcoin event, this is the perfect place and the perfect way to start the week. And because TGFB is about doing things right, every attendee will receive a numbered limited edition TGFB Las Vegas dog tag available only at this event. There are only 99 tickets available. And once they're gone, they're gone. So if you're going to be in Vegas and you want to come, you need to act now. Grab your ticket at tgfb.com/store or via the pinned tweet on the TGFB Twitter account. For the next week only, TGFB pod listeners can get 15% off their ticket by using promo code Vegas15 at checkout. Buy yours today and we'll see you in Vegas. All right, guys. My name is Jordan Bush. I am the executive director of TGFB Media, and today we're going to do something a little bit different. This is something we're going to do a lot more of in the near future. We're going to just look at some Christian takes on Bitcoin. We'll probably expand out beyond Christians, but there's still plenty of people who are otherwise intelligent people who, for some reason, feel the need to talk about Bitcoin when they have obviously not done the reading and because of that, as a result, say things that are just so silly and illogical if you stop and think about them for a few minutes. So today is our first example of this. We're going to look at a video from a contributor to Fox News, Fox Business, a hedge fund manager, and a Christian named David Bahnsen. David is the son of theologian and, again, Christian apologist Greg Bahnsen, who went to be with the Lord a number of years ago. David did not follow in his dad's footsteps in becoming a theologian. He went to, got involved with business, got involved in a whole bunch of things, actually. He was a manager for some Christian rock bands back in the day, some of the Tooth and Nail Records bands. It's a whole crazy story of how I know that. But with that being said, David is not a fan of Bitcoin. He talks a lot about stocks. He talks a lot about productive businesses and wanting to invest in people. And so, again, in his mind, Bitcoin is just rampant gambling, speculation, total speculation. And so he's not a big fan of it. So we're going to watch a number of things from him. For right now, this will be one video. He tweeted this yesterday. And let's see if I can show you the actual tweet. Oh, no. Sorry about that. He tweeted this yesterday. There are bad ideas, and then there are laughably stupid ones. Like this. This is in response to Trump doing the strategic Bitcoin reserve. And so he thinks this is just a laughably foolish idea, misuse of resources, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see what David Bahnsen has to say.
You don't support strategic crypto reserve at all, ever, do you?
Of course not, but it isn't because I'm not a Bitcoin enthusiast.
Spoiler alert. David is not a Bitcoin enthusiast. again, he's just trying to, reason with us and just say, listen, you could be the greatest Bitcoin enthusiast in the world and still not want the United States to buy Bitcoin because, it's just not something that has value.
Just because something has limited access to the fixed number doesn't give it value.
Like, scarcity is a huge part of value. Why could Elon Musk literally charge $1 million for his time? Because his time is scarce. Why is gold, what's a part of gold's value? That's scarce. What's a part of, a whole host of things. It's a part of a value of a Lamborghini. There's scarcity. I'm not trying to suggest that scarcity is the only element of it, of value, but it certainly is a very important one. Obviously, you could find a one-of-one painting that I did when I was when I was in high school, and obviously that's not going to have the same value as a one-of-one Rembrandt. I agree. Scarcity isn't sufficient on its own. He's correct, but this is where he starts to really reason very poorly. And let's see what he compares Bitcoin to here.
There's not that many Hunter Biden paintings in the world. Does that make them more valuable? It has to be rare and useful.
So, of all the things that David Bahnsen could compare Bitcoin to, he chooses rare, quote unquote, rare Hunter Biden paintings. All right. Now, for those of you who, you know, maybe are, you're not into politics, that's not your game. You're like, what in the world is, where is he getting this Hunter Biden painting thing? Well, apparently Hunter Biden took a painting somewhere along the line and has sold a number of paintings for millions of dollars. Now, again, we could probably have a real frank, completely non-conspiracy related conversation about, you know, what is the motivation behind these paintings? You know, the fine art market more broadly is a tremendous, it's been used for all kinds of things, a tremendous money laundering vehicle. And so one could speculate that it would have something to do with the value of Hunter Biden's paintings. You know, I pay you millions of dollars for this painting, and all of a sudden I get access to Hunter, your dad, or something along those lines. So now the question is, obviously, it's one thing to make a comparison. The question is this an apt comparison? Is there, does it make sense to compare the value of scarce Bitcoin with a painting from Hunter Biden? And I would say that is, it's an asinine, it's actually an asinine comparison. Now, why would that be? Well, what is the difference between paintings and Bitcoin? Okay, Hunter Biden paintings. First of all, if you're going to try to sell, one of these things, you're going to have to demonstrate some way to prove that the actual painting is from Hunter Biden. You're going to have to, you know, have somebody who's an expert to, you know, assay this work. You know, they're going to be able to look at this work and just, you know, examine it for Hunter's particular style and ability and whatever. You're going to need someone to do that. And again, that's going to be subjective. Like, obviously, there's been, you can find example after example of paintings throughout time that were thought to be legitimate and then later were found to be fraudulent. This is not difficult to find examples of. Now, Bitcoin, on the other hand, what's, you know, whereas with a painting, you have to physically transport it. You have to, you know, pay for shipping to protect it, whatever you want to do. With Bitcoin, you can send billions and billions and hundreds of billions, potentially trillion. I mean, you could send, again, theoretically, you could send trillions of dollars worth of Bitcoin from one wallet to another on the other side of the world with no banking intermediary needed. I don't have to seek a third party to interact between us for a transaction. I can just send money. I can send tremendous amounts of value. Now, again, that might not seem valuable to David because David is bound within the United States. David works within the context of the United States, and David has access to all kinds of instruments that allow him to move, even though they're not using base layers. He's using, you know, all kinds of different things. There's all kinds of tools available to Americans that enable them to move money very quickly in a way that, you know, basically renders Bitcoin unnecessary or unvaluable in David's eyes. David says, I have these other things. One of these things that we're going to find is that frequently with a lot of these examples, the reason why people don't see the value of Bitcoin, it's actually because of something Jesus talked about. Jesus said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. And so he was talking about the reason why so few people actually found him valuable was because they did not see that they were sick. They didn't see that Jesus was medicine for a real need that they had. They wanted to deny that need, or they wanted to, you know, provide for that need in other ways. And so they just didn't recognize his true value. And this same thing is very true with Bitcoin in a lot of cases. And again, some of this is, it's for good reasons. Like, the United States is a much more stable monetary system than many other places around the world. Again, we could parse out details and debate that to a degree. And I would agree with those of you who are listening and thinking, well, wait a second, you know, the dollar's been very volatile in the last 100 years that it's been in, you know, or again, we could debate on the particulars. But at the time that, you know, over time, the dollar has changed, it's been very volatile. It's lost 90 some odd percent of its value in the last 100 years. Again, we could talk about this, but there are other things that other reasons for which David would have a hard time understanding the value of Bitcoin. Now, obviously, again, we agree, as we said, that the scarcity alone won't do it. But Bitcoin Bitcoin's value is not just in its scarcity. It's the fact that you can move billions of dollars across the world. It's the fact that you can monetize energy. Again, we're seeing this done in Africa. We're seeing this done on the oil fields of Texas. People taking scarce energy that they have, you know, scarce excess energy, and turning it directly into money that they can sell immediately into the market or send across the world to fund anything from nonprofit organization projects or, again, other business ventures. Again, this is an incredible thing that is unique to Bitcoin. There are uses. David just isn't aware of them because, and again, this makes some sense because David's context for hearing about Bitcoin is generally through cable news and through companies on Wall Street who are looking at Bitcoin as a as an investment for the future. They're looking at it as a speculative investment, even though one could ask ourselves, well, what differentiates a quote-unquote speculative asset from any other asset? And the answer would be really not much when you actually look down at when you actually break things down, because every asset that someone buys is a speculative asset. You're buying it because you're speculating on the future value of that thing. And because none of us know the future, all of these actions are speculative. There have been people who throughout time have, they had very good reason in their minds to think that saving their money in their local national currency would return to them great value. They, you could look at Germany at different points of its history, and you could say, wow, Germany is one of the strongest, one of the most cultured, one of the most upstanding countries in the world. Surely if we hold its currency, then we'll be fine. And then they found out that a few years later, oh, shoot, these things can go really bad really quickly. And so, that speculation did not pay off. Again, you could go down companies themselves. You could buy a stock in a company and they could have great fundamentals. And then something could happen. There could be market disruption. And then that investment, that speculation that was made could be proven to be disastrous and not provide the return that you're looking for. And so what David and many other people who are familiar and work in the traditional investing world, what they try to do is pretend that there are these speculative investments that are especially scary, okay? And they're very scary. We should look down on them. And then there's these other safe assets over here that are perfectly safe. You know, we shouldn't even think twice about putting our money in them because they're much more safe. This is simply a confusion. These are not, again, this is part of the problem, is that in order to have success on Wall Street, you are not required to be a first principles thinker. You're not required to actually look at the undergirding principles that actually form and govern the real world. The Wall Street is a system that can be gamed because of the ever-changing rules that govern it, the ever-changing exceptions, the ever-changing things that governments can do by different laws and by different things can use to manipulate the actual market itself. And so Mr. Bahnsen and many other people, they have become experts and made billions of dollars by learning the rules and learning to game the existing system. Now, again, Bitcoin is a parallel system. Bitcoin is a totally different system. And in order to understand how that system works and understand the benefits of it, you actually have to spend time. You actually have to pretend and lend it the possibility that it actually could be something different than what you think it to be. And so because people like Mr. Bahnsen have not done that work, they demonstrate how foolish they are when they try to talk about things they don't understand. So let's keep going here and see what else he says.
The Bitcoin issue, when he says it's a store of value, you asked him a couple times about volatility. It's come down 70% three times in the last 10 years.
Okay. So again, Bitcoin's volatility has fallen 70% three times in the last 10 years. Okay. So again, what does that mean? Well, again, the Bitcoin actually hasn't changed. Okay. The Bitcoin has stayed the same. Now people have moved in and out of Bitcoin. They've sold Bitcoin for various reasons. Now, again, why is that? Why is it that Bitcoin has been so volatile relative to other things? Okay. Is it just a function of Bitcoin? Is it something, does it say something about Bitcoin, something negatively about Bitcoin? It actually doesn't. Okay. One of the reasons why Bitcoin is volatile is because when there is volatility, when there is a need, you don't sell the things you want to, you sell the things that you can sell. And so because of how liquid Bitcoin is, you can sell Bitcoin immediately. Okay. It's a global market, whereas the United States stock market is limited to the United States. There are obviously other people in other countries that can get access to it, but the average person around the world does not have access to the stock market. And so because of that, it's much more illiquid. On top of that, the stock market is closed. It's a physical place. There are physical people who actually work in a place where they do these trades. Obviously, there's people who trade, independent of that as well, but it actually has hours of operations when this market is open and closed. Bitcoin is open 24/7, 365. The stock market's only open, I believe, it could be as little as 3 days a week if there's holidays or something, some other things like that. Bitcoin is 24/7. Bitcoin is open all the time. People can always sell for any reason. And again, when people get into problems, they sell the thing that they can sell. Again, this is why something like, if you compare Bitcoin to something like houses, okay, if you're going to sell a house, it takes time to sell it. It takes months, if not, weeks, if not months, days, if not weeks, if not months. And so again, this is something that makes it, makes it difficult to move. Now, is that somehow more valuable? Does that make real estate more valuable because it takes more time? No. It just means there's more time. It's just different. And so with Bitcoin, again, the volatility of Bitcoin is in its whatever fiat currency denominated price. Again, there's 100 factors that are contributing to this. Mr. Bonson conveniently overlooks the fact that, well, yes, it has dropped 70% for very short periods of time. It's also increased in value millions of percent over that time. And so again, to only focus on Bitcoin's downside dollar denominated volatility is to miss the forest for the trees. Bitcoin is an appreciating asset. Now, here's why I believe this is the case. Because what Mr. Bonson wants you to believe as you listen to, as you watch his clip and listen to what he's saying, he wants you to believe that the primary reason why Bitcoin is so volatile is only because there are speculators out in the market and they're just waiting to pump this thing up and then to dump it down onto unsuspecting retail people so that they can get dollar denominated gains as fast as possible, as much as possible. Again, what he's overlooking is that on top of the fact that yes, Bitcoin, again, its dollar denominated price has been growing throughout this period, Bitcoin's usage and adoption has also been growing exponentially, continually through this entire period. We don't have periods where Bitcoin's dollar denominated value is going up and then we have this giant exit of the, you know, the capital that's in the space. And then it just goes into a period where, where there's actual, just where there's only resources and people moving away from the project because they've lost all this money. No, this entire time, you can look at the adoption curve of Bitcoin. I'll figure out a chart to basically demonstrate this and I'll put it in the show notes. But basically Bitcoin's adoption continues to grow over time. And yet there's still only 2% of the world that owns any of it. And so again, Bitcoin in a very real sense is like a child that's moving into its teenage years. And just like children and teenagers, there's going to be volatility involved. These are, again, babies. I compare Bitcoin to babies all the time because, again, for the same reason that it would be foolish, and in the same way that it would be foolish to avoid having children because of their volatility in their early years, it's also foolish to avoid having any exposure to Bitcoin because it's going to be volatile in its early years. Volatility is life. It is the price of life. It's the price of growth. And so just like every other aspect of our life, there's going to be periods of more volatility than others. When children are young, there's extreme volatility emotionally. There's extreme volatility physically. There's periods of fast growth and then slowed growth. And so again, you can't get adults unless you tolerate and endure the volatility and work through and train through the volatility of youth. And so again, this shouldn't change your exposure. You shouldn't avoid exposure to Bitcoin for this. What you need to do is adapt your expectations. And so again, Mr. Bonson, for some reason, he has got this deep-seated belief that this is all just a Ponzi scheme, which again is a flawed and misunderstanding what a Ponzi scheme is even. Again, people tell on themselves all the time that they really don't know what they're saying because they haven't humbled themselves to take the time to actually figure out what these things are and what's going on. So if you were to, if you imagine, if you're thinking about, I want you to think about the value of the early church, okay? If you're a Christian, think about the value of the early church, okay? So now if you're in, let's say you're in 55 AD, okay, Jesus has returned from the dead. He's ascended to heaven. He's, tasked his disciples to go make disciples of all nations. He said, the gates of hell will not be able to stand against you. I am the king. I'm going to win. If you were to look at that and you'd say, well, what's the value of getting involved in becoming a disciple of Jesus at that point? What would you say? Again, there were underlying fundamentals to Christianity that existed independent of anybody else's approval that contributed to its success. And so, again, now you could look at this and be like, listen, this is 12 guys in the beginning. This is 12 guys. We can add some more guys, some more girls, whatever. This is a very small group of people. Okay. And you're telling me this Jesus is saying, okay, you know, based on the structure, based on, you know, these promises that I've given you, based on who I am, this thing is going to succeed relative to these other things. And the answer would be yes. Yeah. Now, again, if you were to judge with your eyes at any given point in 55 AD, you know, what are the odds of this happening? The odds that Christianity would outlast the Roman Empire or any other empire around the world. The question is, what kind of measuring or yardstick would you use to measure this kind of thing? You wouldn't really be able to have one in any real sense, because you're just like, I mean, Jesus has said it's the word of Jesus versus, you know, history and all these other things that are undergirding the Roman Empire and you know, its economy and its strength in the world. Again, it would have seemed a very silly thing. But again, you could also look at the underlying fundamentals and you say, well, the fundamentals of Rome is that it's built on fear, it's built on its military, it's built on, you know, its currency being used all throughout this region. And if something were to change and for some reason that, you know, this currency would become less demanded through, you know, I don't know, like maybe we just devalue the currency and then it becomes more and more worthless over time. And if you could see this process, if you could actually see this happening and then project forward into the future, like if this keeps going on, then it actually would make sense to do something to basically have an alternative to this. Okay. That actually would make a lot of sense. Now, again, that's where Bahnsen is trying to make this case. Oh, it's all purely speculation. Let's keep going here. And then we'll look at a couple examples of what I'm talking about.
And when he's talking about 401k analogy, those are used to meet a future liability. You have assets that you're going to use for future spending. He's talking about reserve fund for the state to hold. For the federal government, they don't have a positive net worth. They have $36 trillion of debt.
Okay. So yes, the United States and the individual states are in tons of debt. Okay. The problem is that every fiat currency is debt. Okay. Modern money, modern currency is debt. The way that the money is created is through the issuance of new loans. That's the overall majority of how the money is created. It's through the issuance of new loans. And so if Donald Trump were to take these excess Doge money findings or whatever, and were to pay down this debt, it still wouldn't change the fact that the system is a debt-based system. The system is broken. This has not always been the case. We've had different types of currencies in the past, different types of monies that actually have production costs. And so Bitcoin is one of those, in the same way that gold or silver, or you could go through a whole host of examples. Money throughout time, in the countries that have built the world as we now know it, they had scarce currencies. They use things like gold and silver that actually required a production cost. If you're going to produce gold or silver currency, you have to pay guys. Okay, or enslave people, which is, again, you're still getting the value of their labor, to go out into a field or go out into, you know, the mountains and dig up and look for gold. You're going to mine it. You're going to knock it out. You're going to clean it off. Then you're going to refine it, which takes more time, takes more real world energy, takes more real world resources. All of these things, there's a production cost to money. And so again, these are commodities is one way to look at this. And so again, all of these things, this is how the world has worked. This is how the world that we know was built. And then as we can observe all throughout the history of political history and throughout the history of the rises and falls of nations, most of the time, these nations, they debase their currency in order to have more currency units, in order for the political leaders to have more power. It's expedient in the short term to do something that is in the it's actually against the long term interests of both the people themselves and the government and the nation state. And yet they continue to do this because their time preference is high. And so, again, they do these things. So again, for David to try to make this case that, oh, you know, this is such a misuse of resources, we should just pay down the debt if we have extra money. It's just incredibly foolish. It doesn't take into account the fact that the system that we have is broken. The system that we have is a debt-based system. And the only way to move away from a debt-based system is to come up with is to use a different system, a new system, a parallel system that functions differently than the debt-based system. Okay. And so in this sense, actually, President Trump is insane. as this can sometimes as this can be because of things that he says and does. This is actually incredibly is demonstrating a ton of foresight in his part to look around and see this dynamic and see the consequences that it's had over time, and to recognize that Bitcoin is something very different than the dollar, and so to recognize that this is a scarce asset, and to recognize that we actually have a tremendous incentive to begin stockpiling this asset that we can, again, this asset that we can mine with excess energy reserves. Okay, this is an incredibly, incredibly smart thing to do, wise thing to do. So again, this idea, again, it just demonstrates that Mr. Bahnsen doesn't understand what Bitcoin is, how it works, or again, the history and nature of money. He doesn't understand it. So let's continue here.
If they get extra money, instead of buying Bitcoin, go pay down the debt.
Yeah, no. Again, this is we could go a whole bunch of ways with this. Now, obviously, here's a question. If you're a Christian and you're listening to this and you're listening to me talk about this, and you say, well, listen, the scriptures, okay, the scriptures say, what do they tell Christians? They say, especially in the New Testament, owe no man anything. 100%. I agree. It's pretty cut and dry. Now, again, this condemns if you're gonna try to put this in my face, Mr. Bahnsen. I'm not saying that he would, but again, if you're trying to lay this out, first of all, I 100% agree with you. This is true. And so, generally speaking, Christians should avoid debt. I agree. Okay. Again, at the same time, we need to look at the history of these things, that debt-based currencies collapse because if they don't move into some other system, they collapse and then they're replaced by a harder currency. They're replaced by some sort of currency who restores this characteristic of scarcity to the money. And so again, if Bitcoin is that, and it is, okay, then again, what then moving back to that type of a system is actually producing the end goal that Mr. Bahnsen wants us to pursue, even if it's not done in a way that he is okay with, at least in this moment. Again, I'm confident that Mr. Bahnsen's actually going to over time come around and again, do the reading and actually come to understand again, the history related to these things, because he's a thoughtful man. He's a you know, brilliant person. He's personal friends with you know, people that I know who again are very grateful for him and for his generosity. And I'm sure he's given, you know, millions of dollars and in investing all kinds of money and giving jobs to Christians all over the country, if not the world. So again, this is not something to say, you know, he's a horrible person. Not at all. It's just he's speaking out of his depth and won't stop to realize that. So let's see, and this only has a few more seconds here, let's see what else he has to say.
We know how you feel, David.
Oh, I'm holding back right now.
Oh, he's holding back. Okay. All right. Well, again, we'll see some of the other videos where Mr. Bahnsen makes his feelings about Bitcoin known. All right. So there we go. So there's the end of that video. There are some other, if Mr. Bahnsen wants to see Bitcoin's utility, here's an example. I had somebody post this the other day. So the government of Bolivia, a South American country, not too far away from Uruguay, where my family and I lived and ministered. The government of Bolivia just rugged everyone. This is 2 days ago, I think. The government of Bolivia just rugged everyone holding dollars in their bank accounts and instead is telling people they will get the commensurate amount in the local currency, bolivianos, which is redeemable back to USD for 50% less. This is why Latin America needs crypto. X that out and say Bitcoin. So again, what happened here? The government of Bolivia just decided we're going to take the dollars that are in everyone's accounts, and then we're going to give them back to you at a 50% loss. So basically, they just took 50% of the purchasing power of all of the privately held bank accounts that their citizens and their companies had. This is theft. Okay, this is absolute theft. This is not okay. This should not be applauded by anyone who's a Christian. This shouldn't be applauded by anybody, because this is a disastrous precedent to set. This is a horrible precedent that will introduce all kinds of distrust into a governmental system that is reliant and based and founded completely on trust at bottom. And so this kind of action, which is not novel, this has happened all over the place. Cyprus was a famous example. They did a bail-in. The government took a bunch of the money from the bank accounts. Again, this is a horribly unjust thing to do. And again, this person, whoever this Kush person is, they are correct to recognize that crypto, and more specifically Bitcoin, is an alternative to this. Bitcoin is a way to opt out of this. This was shared by a friend of ours, works for Voltage, Bobby Shell. So this is again to the point that Mr. Bonds was making. He is speaking about a very particular context. Now, to be fair, most of the people under the sound of his voice in that video are in that same context. So again, that makes sense to a degree that he would speak to the context he's in. At the same time, there are billions of people around the world who do not have the privileges afforded to the members of the United States, and who are in situations that are you know, desperate and drastically different and drastically worse than the situation that Americans find themselves in. And so to them, Bitcoin is actually a far more stable and far less speculative asset at this point in time. And so, again, to act like his situation is indicative of everyone around the world and is indicative of the only reason why anybody who is actually looking at Bitcoin, it's just greed or it's just gambling, it's just ill-informed, and it's just not true. It's a lie. And so we want to call out this lie for what it is. So that's one example. Again, Bitcoin is money that can be custodied personally, does not require permission to be used, in much the same way that custodying cash in your, you know, in your personal wallet, your personal house, or custodying gold and then using it to spend it, it does not require permission. And that's been a tremendously valuable characteristic of money throughout time, even if not in this exact moment. Now, here's another example. All right, let's look over here. Okay, so this is from today. Okay, Russia leans on cryptocurrencies for oil trade, sources say. Okay, big if true. Now, Russia's getting a lot of flack for the war that it's involved in. Not here to talk about that. Not here to examine the legitimacy of this war and, you know, some, you know, justifications or lack of justifications that might exist for either side of this war, whatever it is. Here we have one of the largest countries, one of the most powerful countries, the country with more nuclear weapons than any other country on Earth, because the United States decided for some reason to get rid of some of them. They are using cryptocurrencies to pay for oil from China and India in order to skirt Western sanctions. Now, again, what I'm not trying to suggest is that this is a good thing, or that, you know, I'm not trying to say this is a good or bad thing. I'm just trying to say this is a thing. Okay, this is something that is happening today. They are recognizing the value of Bitcoin in order to complete transactions that would otherwise be thwarted from things like the SWIFT system, that they would need to get permission from the United States. And so what this does is it affects national sovereignty. It affects the abilities of countries to exercise their own will without needing to ask permission from other countries. And again, this is an incredibly valuable thing. Now, again, Russia, why would Russia choose to do this? Well, it's because they have transacted another thing with gold. This is one way that they're paying for some of their oil, apparently, based on what I've read. But again, there's other things that make Bitcoin very desirable. Russians can send these payments, final settlement in minutes to China or to India. This is incredibly valuable. Again, you could do this for very low fees as well. There's been people who sent hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin for less than a $5 fee. This is incredible. This is incredible stewardship on their part to not have to waste money in order to hire trucks or airplanes and then pay for fuel to send these things and to transport these amounts of currency. Again, this is just another very useful, this is a utility-based argument today that you can do with Bitcoin. This is not somehow speculating on the future value. This is incredibly valuable for Russia and for India and for China, three of the largest countries, largest economies in the world. They're finding Bitcoin very valuable today. And so again, this is just to demonstrate again that these tired arguments that should have been put to death a long time ago, okay, if these otherwise smart men would stop talking long enough to look into these things, they'd actually find that the arguments that they're making are very poor and do themselves a great disservice and are going to make them look very foolish, because this is not going to be a limited case. There's going to be plenty of other countries that transact and interact with Bitcoin. You know, one of the things that happened throughout time is that the Spanish, they would send a ship full of golden doubloons. They would send it from Spain to the United States, and those ships would get shipwrecked, and they'd end up at the bottom of the ocean. And now people are excited to find, hundreds of years later, they can still find some of these gold doubloons. Bitcoin disintermediates this. Bitcoin presents a better way. Bitcoin presents a lower risk option to transact with a scarce currency that, you know, doesn't require the same type of trade-offs as you know, transacting in gold or dollars, whether those trade-offs be physical trade-offs, whether those be political, economic, whatever they are. Bitcoin is a great option. It's a great example. It's a great use case that is tremendously valuable for some of the largest economic entities on Earth. We're going to stop there for today. These are some examples of why you should value Bitcoin and why, again, you should not listen to these people when they talk about Bitcoin. We're going to look at a whole bunch more because sadly, we are still very early. Grateful for your time. We will be back in the very near future looking at things from guys like Dave Ramsey, guys like Al Mohler. We're going to look at a whole bunch of people, guys who are faithful Christians, but who have said absolutely batty things about Bitcoin. We are grateful for you. If you want to support TGFB, if you want to support what we're doing, you can like and subscribe on our YouTube channel. You can go subscribe to us on the different podcast platforms. You can look at Spotify and Apple. Those are the two big ones. If you want to support what we're doing, you can subscribe and like and share those things so that more people find them. This episode of the TGFB podcast is presented by River. River is the best and most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. You can head over to river.com/TGFB to set up an account today, and you'll be able to VCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. The river.com/learn tab is one of the best places to find helpful learning materials and videos that help explain what Bitcoin is, how it works. They have a bunch of other features as well. You can give people Bitcoin via River links. You can be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network and be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin or sell Bitcoin at a particular price, either above or below where it is now. There's also the ability to leave cash in your River account and earn 3.8% paid out in Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TGFB. Set up your account in minutes today. Go support those guys. We'll be back on more episodes of the TGFB podcast. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.